Welcome to Mustard A&E's. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
And we missed another week because I think Richard gave me the flu the previous time I was here.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Could be. I'm sorry.
Next time you're feeling sick, we'll wave off.
I apologize.
That's okay. I haven't had a fever in years. I had a fever.
Wow. Very. I don't think I actually had a fever, but I was definitely, definitely sick.
It's like one of those things your wife's like, well, just take your temperature. And you're like, no. It's like, that's a gender difference. Mm-hmm. The women are always like, well, just take your temperature. And the men are all, what are you talking about? Take your temperature.
Take your temperature.
I'm sitting here. What do you want?
You know, when they have this these psychologists, and I was reading this thing, and they were trying to test and evaluate humor and people's responses to it. So they had to come up with a joke that everybody would everybody would recognize it's a joke, and then how people gauged it and responded to it told certain things about it, but it had to be legitimately funny to everybody, and this was the joke. What's the difference between an oral thermometer and a rectal thermometer? The taste.
Wow, I hadn't heard that. Reminds me of that Monty Python sketch about the joke they would unleash to the Germans.
I remember.
It's like in World War II. All right.
Anyway.
So we talk about things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. So it's movies and TV and video games and a little bit of tech. And that's where we're at. So I'm still getting over the cold flu. I've had a cough for a long time now. Hopefully when I feel the urge to cough, I will stuff the mic into the couch cushions.
There you go.
Since we don't actually have a cough button. So I've actually seen a lot of movies in the past 2 weeks as I've been sick.
Mm-hmm.
They're all, you know, slightly older, but like Time Bandits came across the Family HD channel and I recorded it.
Oh, HD.
Hadn't seen it in a long time.
Yeah.
Couple things. I mean, I remembered it being a weird film because it's a Terry Gilliam film.
Yep.
And of course it's going to be weird. But even weirder than I remember in terms of it being random. A couple things that struck out. John Cleese has top billing in this movie.
Yep.
He's in it for about 5 minutes as Robin Hood. And I remember that he wasn't in it very much,
yep.
But top billing. Second billing, I believe, was Michael Palin,
mm-hmm.
who's in it twice, but again, for about 5 minutes. Now, he co-wrote it with Terry Gilliam,
yep.
which I didn't
Gilliam.
Remember.
But the thing about that was that was the only thing he was able to sell that movie. He was trying to be a director.
Oh, I'm sure.
And they said, well, if you can get your buddies in it, and they could, even though it wasn't Monty Python, they could say, well.
Because it's, the main characters are a kid and like 7 or 8 midgets.
Yeah.
And if you watch a lot of movies, you end up recognizing, like, Kenny Baker was R2-D2 actually in the R2-D2
yep.
costume. And I'm surprised Warwick Davis wasn't in it.
He's been in a number of other Lucasfilm things.
But, and clearly it would have been a tough marketing sell.
But the movie did pretty well, and that was the thing that launched his career. For a movie that's as weird as that movie is, it's amazing how well it did, how popular it was.
Yeah, and just, yeah, very weird, and not as enjoyable as I remembered it being.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just because it's not dating terribly well, or seeing seeing subsequent Terry Gilliam films, it doesn't stand up quite as much, or it ends up being just a little too weird. Anyway, not a bad film, but
yeah.
definitely an odd film.
Mm-hmm.
And especially that ending is so bizarre.
I don't remember the ending.
All right, I'm going to reveal the ending.
Of a 20-year-old movie.
Yeah. The house, like he sort of is awoken from his fever dream, and you're left wondering, was the whole thing a dream, even though he's got these Polaroids? Because like the final climactic action battle scene is actually represented in toys on his
mm-hmm.
floor.
Mm-hmm.
But his parents end up disappearing because they touch the pure evil that was in the microwave. And he's left standing there in front of his smoking house. The firemen leave
yeah.
with the Sean Connery character. And the camera just pulls back, and that's it. And you're
nice.
Kind of left, oh, I don't care that the parents died necessarily, but that's the rest of it's so bizarre. I'm not quite sure left what to think.
Hmm.
Anyway, I also saw Narnia.
Oh, yeah, I still haven't seen that.
Rented that DVD.
Any good?
Borrowed the DVD. I thought, you know, if I was 12 or 14, that would be the bee's knees.
Really?
I would be really into it. Mm-hmm. But not being 12 or 14, I look at it and think, well, if I want to see this, I'll just watch Return of the Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing terribly original about the movie. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's based on the Narnia books, which have been, you know, C.S. Lewis and Tolkien were friends.
Yep.
So it's not like one was necessarily ripping off the other, but it's, you know, a children's sword and sorcery film. And there's this sort of basically, Aslan, as I'm about to reveal here, is sort of...
Aslan's the lion.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's sort of this...
And he's Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they're apparently religious subtext I was completely unaware of when I read the books as a kid.
Apparently, and I am seeing, but apparently, I guess you could call the beauty of it, is it can work completely without any religious subtext.
It's,
if you get it, it works completely with that. And I actually appreciate that. I like that more than...
I agree.
Something overt, so.
And yet, I just felt it was kind of a deus ex machina at the end, and it wasn't all that involving. I don't know. I just think it was aimed at a younger audience, which is perfectly fine. But me, I was bored. It didn't, you know, I feel no desire to own the DVD or listen to the commentary or watch any of them. You know, it's just, okay, I've seen it, next.
Was it on HDNet?
No, I borrowed that from a friend.
Okay.
They had it. Also, just saw Spy Game, which was also on one of the HD movie channels.
Didn't you and I go see that?
I don't think so.
Isn't that the one with Brad Pitt, or not, with... Yeah.
Brad Pitt, Robert Redford.
Yeah, we saw that at the Alderwood 7-plex before they remodel or whatever, but...
Okay, I have no recollection of that, but okay.
We did, and our recollection time is... This ain't all that great. I mean, it seemed okay, but it just seemed...
No, I thought it was fine.
Maybe we didn't see it. No, I'm pretty sure we did see it. I remember distinctly seeing it and thinking, hadn't seen Robert Redford in a while, and, you know...
No, yeah. I really enjoy the movie. I had forgotten it was a Tony Scott movie.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, as you watch it...
That's a Tony Scott movie?
There's a couple of camera moves he's in love with.
Yeah.
Because I recognized, like, there was a lot of... There was one shot in particular that reminded me of Enemy of the State. It's like, oh, well, he's reused this shot a couple times.
Yep.
But I really enjoyed it. The editing was just maybe a touch too energetic.
Yeah.
But other than that, I really enjoyed it.
Cool.
What else did I see? Oh, borrowed the Undeclared TV series set. Because I'd seen I borrowed your 40-Year-Old Virgin a couple of weeks ago and watched that. And
need some Joe D'Apatow fix?
No, really, Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
Who played the obnoxious Cal in 40-Year-Old
Virgin.
You know,
I had totally forgotten Seth Rogen. To me, 40-Year-Old Virgin, it was like, who is this guy? Because he was funny, he was great, he was unique.
Hysterical.
And I didn't realize he was anything beyond 40-Year-Old Virgin. Then when I saw he like co-wrote it and he's like buddies with, but I didn't realize that. And then later I realized, oh yeah, in Undeclared and all this other stuff, I realized I had known him before. I just, it was on my radar
screen.
I
did not recognize him as Ron from Undeclared, but so I wanted to revisit those. And so we've watched all but the last three episodes. That was a really good show.
It was.
And
I know, it's one of those shows where you're going, why is this being canceled? Why give it a chance?
Well, it's funny if you read the booklet and the DVD box set talking about, like, there's show notes for each one.
This is the one where it's the freshman in college.
Yeah, they're college. And they're saying, and by this point, Fox had decided that Steven's story was told. We didn't need to learn any more about him and his friends at college, that the arc was complete.
God.
And they're talking about, in the beginning, he's talking about how horrendous the Freaks and Geeks experience was, and he put all his energy into it, and he herniated a disc in his back, and, you know, because he was so stressed about making the show work, and he's like, you know, the next show, how about it's fun, and I'm not as involved, and I just have fun, and instead I went through everything again.
It's impossible not. Speaking of Freaks and Geeks,
which I never saw.
I was stunned last week. It sounds goofy. But I was stunned when, was it Conan or Letterman? They had the gal from The Office on, who
Fisher.
No, not Jenna
Pam?
Fisher. The other one, the Jim's
oh, Karen.
Other.
I don't know what the actress's name is.
Okay. Well, her name is Rashida Jones. And I remember looking at her and seeing her on The Office or whatever, and then she's on she's on Conan or Letterman, and she's talking about her parents, and she goes, well, yeah, my parents are in the industry. My dad's Quincy Jones, and I'm like, what?
Really?
and then I realized, oh my God, so her mom must be Peggy Lipton, because Quincy Jones was married to Peggy Lipton, who was the hot chick from the Mod Squad for those years. And I realized, oh my God, Rashida, which is kind of an African American name, I realized, wow, she's half black, and I never noticed that. And then when I'm looking at her face, I'm going, wow, she looks exactly like Quincy Jones with her bone structure. But for whatever reason, I never, not that it's a different thing, but for whatever reason, I just thought she like was Italian or something. Then I started to think, wait a second. And I looked and I realized, oh my God, she was that bully on Freaks and Geeks. And then, and so she's been around for a while. It was like this, the weirdest thing to see her, and totally, it changed. For whatever reason, she looked Italian to me. And
ever since in the office, the Steve Carell character Michael Scott made some joke about, "Oh, you look exotic. Was your father a GI?"
Is he
a horrible thing to say? But
was what's his name still a part of the show, or did he leave the?
You got to be a little more specific than what's his name.
No, the what's his name from the
Ed Helms?
Yeah, Ed Helms. Did he? Was he after that whole thing?
He wasn't in the last few episodes.
I know. So I was wondering, because I remember Dwight got he left and then he came back because Ed Helms was maneuvering, and I didn't know if that caused the Ed Helms character to leave.
I don't recall him having an official departure. But...
I don't know either. I love him on this show. I think he's hilarious.
No, but you're right. It's interesting how you can see an actor and be fairly cognizant of actors playing different roles, but because the context is so different, you don't pick up on them.
Yep.
Like Ron or Rashida.
Did you watch Saturday Night Live last night?
I taped it.
Rainn Wilson hosts it. He is really talented. He you could see he could easily be a cast member of Saturday Night Live. Easily. He just went right into it. He was
good.
The very beginning, without giving anything away, they do a little bit of an office spoof. And the characters, they clearly spent time in front of monitors to mirror the looks of the characters in the office. It is spot on, and you're looking at them, and hey, Gilligan, come here, kitty. And you're looking and you're watching, you're going, wow, holy crap. He's got like Jim and Pam down pat. It's really good.
The also saw The World's Fastest Indian.
Oh, what'd you think of that?
Very interesting movie.
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
And yet I found I was expecting it's the true story of a New Zealander who travels to L.A. and then travels to the Bonneville Salt Flats to attempt to set the world land speed record for motorcycles.
Yep. On an Indian motorcycle.
Yeah, on a 1920s Indian Scout.
And mind you, he's doing this in like the 70s, I think, or something.
60s or 70s.
Yeah.
And, characters played by Anthony Hopkins.
Yep.
So he's like six.
True story.
True story. And I found myself continuously waiting because he's meeting all these interesting characters on the way. And I kept waiting for him to meet the character that was going to try and screw him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that he trusts because he's naive. And,
yeah.
And then, you know, all his money is stolen and he, you know, perseveres anyway. And that never happened.
Huh.
Not to give anything away, but, you know, everyone he meets is very helpful.
Yeah.
And it's quite literally an honest, inspiring story. And I don't know if I would have enjoyed it more if I wasn't sort of kept waiting for that. All right, is this the one that's going to screw him? Is this the character
If I remember right, the Straight Story by David Lynch about the guy that hopped on a garden tractor to visit his brother like seven states over was a similar thing. It's like he gets on a tractor and he just drives across and you're going, well, where's the forces against him? But it's just like a bunch of people that are helping him and understanding his journey. And I had that same feeling, like, when's the crazy cop that's trying to stop him from his journey going to come in or something, which never happens.
Yeah, but it was, and so it was just a very simple, good, inspiring movie.
I've been looking for it on DVD in the used pile, and I haven't seen it yet. And I was surprised I hadn't, because it seems like the classic blockbuster DVD where they would buy a bunch of it simply because Anthony Hopkins was in it.
And it really, God, it made me respect Anthony Hopkins more, which I already did, but he really inhabits his character so well. And I read some postings on IMDb about, New Zealanders saying, you know, he really accurately captures what it's like to be a New Zealander. Very unassuming, very, if there's a problem, we'll just fix it. And if, you know, if I don't have the right tools, it doesn't matter. Here's, I'll use a branch, you know, and I'll MacGyver it. And that's, you know, I'll just do it. And there's no fuss, no muss, no drama. But, you know, picturing, you know, the actor playing this very simple character versus Hannibal Lecter versus other roles that he's played, and just like, wow, what a versatile actor that he could so clearly inhabit a role and make you really believe that he's evil versus he's so simple and good.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's not that big a thing because that's what actors are supposed to do, but
yeah,
really impressed me. Also saw the... I write down a note of something I want to mention later. The DVD of the TV series Long Way Round. Do you know what that is? Ewan McGregor and...
where they got on the motorcycle.
Charlie Borman, yeah.
Charlie Borman, who was acted in the Emerald Forest by his dad, John Borman. But other than that, just kind of a celebrity son.
Yeah, these two guys got to be buddies. They met on a movie.
Yeah.
Got to be mates.
Yeah.
And they planned this, you know, riding around the world on motorcycles trip where they basically left London and went across Europe and Eastern Europe and Russia and Kazakhstan and Mongolia, flew to Alaska, went through Alaska, Canada, dropped down to the U.S. and like Michigan or something, and then drove to New York. And it's only 7 episodes. So, you know, I've seen Michael Palin's BBC, yep, PBS travelogues and really enjoyed them,
yep,
as he's tried to just, you know, go pole to pole or around the world in 8 days or the Pacific Rim.
Yep.
And so I'm familiar with this type of travel. This one was a little different. It was only 7 episodes. The first episode is pretty much all prep. You know, here's them dealing with KTM and BMW trying to choose the motorcycles. Here's them doing a test run of, you know, in Wales of, you know, here's the bike falling over.
Yeah.
Because they end up on these BMWs, which, with, before you pack them up with gear, they're like 550 pounds.
Yeah.
That's a big motorcycle.
Yeah.
And once you load them up with gear, you can't pick them up on your own once it falls. You need help.
Yeah.
And anyway, just a really, really well done series.
Cool.
And, you know, their point is just to document the series. And that's it. They ended up with a third writer as a cameraman who does a really good job.
Yeah.
You know, nothing tremendously special or original. It's just very well done. And you really feel, you know, these two guys as they move through different environments and how it can be really different. In Kazakhstan, they always have a police escort and they're starting to chafe against it going, you know, God, I wish we could just be amongst the people. You know, and then they're randomly being offered, oh, come to this hotel. And they're like, is this the mafia? Are we?
Yeah.
This seems so weird. Like 5 minutes ago, this guy just comes up and tells us to come stay at his hotel. And we're like, I don't know. What do we do?
Yeah.
You know, and traveling through bogs and swampland and realizing that these motorcycles, as good as they are for adventure touring, like no motorcycle can get through this swamp.
Yep.
Just amazing, amazing stuff. We watched the entire thing over 2 nights, I think, and my wife's all inspired to do the same thing now. You know, go travel around on motorcycles. So I'm like, okay, we're not doing that trip, but there's other stuff we can do. Anyway, just a good series, although the one irritating thing was the theme song they use is really irritating to hear every hour.
Yeah, well, especially if you're watching it straight through
because
you're just revisiting it. There was a series that was... It was a BBC series that they played on the Travel Channel that I caught, and it was, the heck was the name of it? But it starred Jack Osborne, Ozzy Osbourne's son, and basically it was these two super adventurers, like heavyweight, you know, mountain climbers, where take Jack Osborne on and spend 6 months to get him into shape and turn him into an adventurer. So they start over in Thailand, teaching him Muay Thai kickboxing. And he literally goes in there and goes in the ring, gets the crap beat out of him and beats up some others. Then he goes out and goes on this big adventure run and all this sort of stuff. And it all culminates in him climbing El Capitan down in, is it, not Yosemite, or yeah, Yosemite, yeah. Him climbing that over a 6-day period of them bowling up, and as him slowly losing like 90 pounds and getting in really good shape and stopping being the petulant of a man. And I watched that over, like, it was like a 5-episode straight through, and I was like impressed with the guy, but it was like really cool. I kind of like star-driven shows that are totally a personal show like that, so I found it really interesting.
It was also interesting seeing just Ewan McGregor and how he deals with what kind of person he is as both a movie star and someone who's saying...
Did they even touch on his wife at all?
Yeah, they showed his wife, Ev.
Because I always wonder about
her. She's a very
her.
Normal, you know, she's not an exotic model. She's beautiful. She's a nice looking woman, but looks like someone that you could conceivably hook up with yourself.
But see, that's what I always wonder about him is because he has famously a normal wife, but he is very much away from her a lot of the time. And you just wonder how that, if they even touch on how
well,
that relationship
they, no,
is.
Well, in the prep episode especially, they talk about how difficult it is and how, you know, she's not terribly thrilled.
Yeah.
With him doing it, but understands, and you know, throughout the whole thing, he talks about how much he misses his family and his girls, and they didn't, you know, his wife and family didn't come to the send-off because he said, you know, I already said goodbye to my wife. It was very difficult this morning, and I don't put my kids on TV ever, so they're not here.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, he's drawn this line saying, you know, my kids are not on TV. That's it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the show when they're reunited, you know, it didn't seem like there was going to be any marital problems.
Yeah.
Like she wasn't thrilled that he was leaving, but she was supportive. And
yeah, cool.
Anyway, it was cool to see that aspect. And at the end, him saying, you know, as we're traveling across America, there's been some more business things. I've had to call my agent and had to read a script or two. And
yeah,
but he's very much not I'm a movie star. Treat me well.
Yeah.
You know, he's just a normal guy who goes on this trip and says, you know, it puts it all in perspective of, you know, making movies is such a dawdle. I'm happy to do it because it's what I do, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been, one of the HD channels has Trailer Park.
Mm-hmm.
It's this show that has movie trailers for 30 minutes
yeah.
in high definition.
Wow.
And I told my system to record new episodes of this, but apparently the way it's categorized, everyone is a new episode.
Oh, yeah.
So it ends up being like 4 of these things a day. So I'll flip through some of them just to see, and they end up being, you've seen most of them before.
Yeah.
Yep. You're like, oh, look, it's Spider-Man 3 again. So you just you fast forward through the whole thing in 5 minutes. But it's interesting to see trailers presented like that. I remember when the only way you could see trailers was going to a movie. And
I know,
cool
and now
was.
You
and,
can.
And now it's so rare that I'm at a movie and see a trailer I haven't seen before.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, because you'll go to Joe Blow, you'll go to wherever, you'll see it linked on Movie City News or in Jeffrey Wells, and it's like... And any really important one you definitely have seen before you see in the theater, except for the very rare time when you're seeing Superman and it's going to be the trailer for some movie and they just haven't released it or
yeah.
you haven't seen it. But even then, half the time you've still seen it because somebody's leaked it. So, yeah, it's kind of funny.
Okay, so now we're moving on to some of the...
Well, let me tell you some of the movies I've seen, so we're talking about. I'll go through them very quickly. Tell Them Who You Are, documentary... about Haskell Wexler by his son. Do you know who Haskell Wexler is?
No.
Famous cinematographer.
As I'm sure nobody in the audience knows.
Well, famous cinematographer for Oscar-winning cinematographer, shot Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Bound for Glory, I think Days of Heaven, which is like the great cinematography movie of all time, supposedly. And anyway, an interesting documentary because the guy's just a big asshole. And his son captures that a little bit. His son has a complicated relationship with him because his dad has so many friends like Jane Fonda and George Lucas. His son gets to interview all them in this movie. So it was kind of funny. But the one thing that was the most raw thing I've ever seen in a movie was at the very end, you watch at the very end, he has an outtake and it's his dad watching this movie about him for the first time. and he's filming it. And so his dad watches it. It's all the way done. It's a profile for him. And then his dad says something to the effect, and his dad's clearly very emotional at this point, and does something like, well, first off, something to the effect of, you're clearly a hell of a storyteller and a filmmaker, and he's impressed. And the son immediately just breaks down, bawling and telling his dad, thank you, that means so much to me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the rawest thing I have ever seen. And it's so clear, even though this guy's in his 50s, how much of his life is defined by his dad dominating him and looking for his dad's approval. Anyway, saw Jackass number 2, bought that, and it was as enjoyable as I hoped it would be.
Well,
although there was a couple scenes I literally just fast-forwarded through, specifically a scene involving a horse and the types of fluids that come out of a horse and people drinking them. And I saw, what was the other one I have here? I think I mentioned before I saw Talladega Nights and shockingly enjoyed it. I was surprised and I thought, I really like this. It's not like every other Will Ferrell movie where it just seems like they think by Will Ferrell goofing, that's going to make up for writing or a story. And this one clearly had it. So liked that. Anyway, those are my movies.
Okay. So Sirius and XM finally have said we want to merge.
Yep.
And it's interesting because almost since day one, people have said, oh, well, they should merge.
Yeah. Well, they've actually been around for over a decade, believe it or not. People forget. They think they've only been hearing about Sirius, a lot of them, for like the last couple of years because of Howard Stern. But they were actually launched in the mid to late 90s, actually.
And they would like to merge. And of course, the big thing is, will it pass, you know, the Justice Department? Will they get clearance to merge, or does it form a monopoly? And of course, they will say, well, there's so many ways to get media now with the internet and podcasts and whatnot that it's not a problem. But will that fly?
And the Justice Department also, they have to look at it and go, part of their look at it is what's the benefit to the consumer? And Sirius and XM are basically going to say, the problem is we're going to run each other out of business and both go bankrupt. So there might be no satellite provider if you don't let us do this. That's what they're basically saying.
Which is probably true.
It is and it isn't. I don't totally understand the mechanics of it. Because, I mean, I look at it this way. Sirius, by the end of next year, we'll have 10 million subscribers. So, and of those 10 million, they're paying I'm a Sirius subscriber. I pay $150 a year for my subscription. So they're basically making, you know, if you factor in giveaways and a little bit of discounts, they're basically making about $1.3 billion a year from Sirius subscribers. So they're paying Howard Stern $100 million. Probably for all of their other content combined, they're paying another $100, $150 million. So I'm trying to figure out how you cannot keep a business going on $800 million that you have left over.
I would say because both companies, as I understand it, own their own satellites.
Yep.
And I'm sure it was tremendously expensive.
I'm sure it is as well.
Launching those. But from what I have read, actually the customer acquisition costs are very high.
Well,
there's a ton of giveaways. There's a ton of incentives.
They are, but they're much cheaper than DirecTV was. First of all, XMs are way more because XM's an idiotic company, but they are very high. But if you compare it to say DirecTV and satellite TV when it opened up, they were way higher back then. They were spending an average of like $500 to $1,000 a customer to get them, and it paid off. Now they don't spend anything like that, and they get to keep these customers. And Sirius, Sirius and XM, it's the same way. I don't pretend to totally understand it. From my perspective, there's a little bit on XM I would like things like the Bob Dylan channel or anything else, but I personally, I don't buy the argument of theirs. I mean, I agree with it to some extent. There's a bunch of other options, but to me, the minute they do this, there's not a whole lot of incentive to go out and get new things other than we're just going to lose a customer in general. And I just don't like it. I just don't like the fact that they're not going to be competition. I think the fact that there was competition is the only reason the industry exists in a heartbeat. If Sirius hadn't have gotten Howard Stern, Sirius would have been out of business by now. And everybody agrees with that. Sirius now, and people aren't mentioning this, they're saying it's a merger of equals. Sirius is buying XM. That's exactly how it's being structured. It's actually Sirius taking over XM. And that would have been unthinkable 2 years ago. And ironically, Sirius has less customers than XM, but Sirius is doing is acquiring so many more customers. And the only reason that's the case is because they had competition. There was no reason to do it, you know, otherwise. So I personally wish they weren't doing this, but, you know, they know the numbers better than me, and they may actually realize that they are running out of money, and maybe, and that's something I don't know about. All I know is they're getting my $150 every year. So
it has zero effect on me. I don't listen to either one. I've never listened to either one. If there was a day when I buy a car and it's built in and I don't have to pay anything, or, you know, it's built into the iPod and I don't have to pay anything, then fine, I'll listen. But right now, for my lifestyle, it's got nothing for me. If I traveled a lot, I understand that then I'd look into it.
For me, it's completely transformative because I drive at least an hour and a half every day for work. And then in the mornings I wake up to it, and the radio level, it's just, to me, it's very hard for me to listen to regular radio, because you listen to this where it's open and free, particularly Howard Stern, but also all the NPR channels and the incredible music channels. For me, it's just fundamentally different. But if I had to drive 5 miles to work, it may not make as much sense to me. I do listen to it here on internet radio, but even then, I'm not so sure. I think to me, it's totally about the amount of driving I do.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
did you want to talk about this Clive Cussler?
Oh, yeah. So Clive Cussler, the adventure writer who's apparently supposedly has sold millions and millions of books with these adventure titles like Sahara and other stuff. They had that movie came out a couple years back, directed by, was that the one directed by Michael Eisner's son?
Yep.
Okay. And starring Matthew McConaughey, Penelope Cruz, Steve Zahn, and William H. Macy. And I actually liked it, but it didn't do good business, and apparently it flopped. So what's happening is the Clive Cussler was so mad at his experience, and apparently people have been trying to make movies off his books for years, and he always resisted because he's such a jerk. And finally, this one here, they got to make a movie, but apparently they did it by managing Cussler, by telling him stories, by doing stuff just to get a movie made. It's common principles. But he is so upset because he thinks they ruined the property or whatever. So now he's suing the studio, and they're pulling out all these emails where these production assistants are telling him one thing, and he's showing how the other thing actually happened. And you're reading those emails, and you can just sense, oh my God, they're trying to placate this idiot. And that's clearly what he is. Well, one of the things the studio's counter-suing is to say, okay, we want an auditing of all of your book sales, because you told us you sold 100 million books worldwide. We're now thinking it's closer to 25. Yeah. Well, if there's 100 million readers of your books out there, there's a high likelihood this movie is going to be successful. If there's 30 million, that's a lot less likely. So they're countersuing him or threatening to.
That's really interesting. I would never have thought of that.
So they're saying, hey, you're accusing us of hyperbole. Let's talk about you. And Cussler is such a jerk. I mean, his book, looking at this movie, and I enjoyed the movie. I like a really well-done adventure movie. And there's few out there. Sometimes they try it, like with National Treasure, but they don't really work that often.
But they're making a sequel to National Treasure.
I know. Well, National Treasure, as I was pointing out to you, wow, I had no idea it was as successful as. It was like far and away, you know, Nicolas Cage's biggest movie until this thing, this Ghost Rider. But anyway, it was Sahara, I thought, was a pretty good movie, but you can read into it how creaky the original premise was. I mean, the guy's name is Dirk.
I know. Yeah,
he names his it's just crazy. So anyway, I just find it really funny. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I hope he doesn't win, because clearly the movie makers are the good guys. I mean, Matthew McConaughey really tried hard on that movie. He produced it. And when it came out, man, he literally invested fully in himself promoting it. He actually drove like a bus around showing it and screening stuff. And I'm thinking that's a rare level of commitment. And I, even if it didn't totally work out, this makes me so mad to see this jerky writer, you know, just drag it even worse into the ground.
I was listening to The Business this week, and they had a story, you know, they're running this thing called The Writer Speaks, and this writer was relating a story about, apparently it's from a book compilation of writer's experiences. He wrote Species 2, and he's talking about dealing with the head of MGM dictating something that had to be in the end. We need this alien love child to appear in this ambulance.
Is it because they have like a third movie and that's the plan for it or something, or?
No, they're just trying to go, well, maybe that was the guy's plan, but the ostensible reason was, let's just have a shocking moment at the end.
Okay.
And the writer's thinking, oh, that's the worst idea ever. So he calls the producer, and the producer says, oh, well, that is the worst idea ever, but here's what we did on Friday the 13th, part 8 that worked.
Yeah.
We had a cat in the frame for the last thing, and it scared the hell out of the audience. And so let's put a cat. Oh, and the writers, you could just hear the writer going,
why did I talk to the producer?
Well, it's funny because, you know, you're writing Species 2, and yes, it's work, but you've got to know it's dreck.
And you want to try to make it work, but...
But it's like, it's, all this outside manipulation from people who have no idea what they're doing, but it's the studio head. And they actually played the audio from the end of the movie, and it's hysterical. You can hear this cat growling, and you can hear the music upswelling. Oh, apparently they used both.
Oh, God.
But it's just, it really drives the point home of, you can't be invested in anything. You can't, and so often, you'll come out of a movie saying, well, that was stupid and lame and didn't make any sense, and how much of that had to do with, you know, last minute, oh, the studio head wanted a, oh, God, and part of it was the studio head said, we ended three of our last movies with a funeral, so we can't do that. They didn't do well. Not going to have a funeral at the end of this one. Because so
that was the thing that made the movies not do well. Was
apparently
the
funeral. So. And it's like, how do you deal with morons that have power and money? Yes, you have no choice. You have to do what they say and completely compromise what makes anything.
And they're idiots and they don't have a clue. That's the William Goldman that says, nobody knows nothing. And it's so true. I mean, they latch onto these things that are ridiculous. You ended a movie with a funeral. That's stupid.
So stupid. It was a really good and instructive anecdote.
Cool.
Apparently, Studio 60 was put on hiatus,
basically,
which essentially means it's
hiatus done. Which sucks because
there's
actual episodes out
well,
there.
I don't know, it was 6 or 9 unaired episodes.
Ugh.
And to me, what a waste.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure it cost a ton of money to produce, and there's a lot of talented people involved. But B, you know, my wife's interest was slacking. And we kind of thought about it and said, well, you know what? When it started, it was a show about the behind the scenes of a variety show, of an SNL type show. And lately, it's morphed into being very focused on these two relationships.
Yeah.
And much less so about the mechanics or, you know, the behind the scenes aspects of the show. And, you know, we wondered if that was a voluntary choice by Sorkin, or if it was focus tested and mandated by the studio saying,
you know
what?
I get the feeling it was voluntary because he thought that's what I need to do to get this thing kickstarted because that's what Grey's Anatomy is or whatever. I mean, I think it's like a mix of the two, I guess.
It's a shame. It really is because I think everyone involved is so talented. Even if it wasn't as good as it was in the beginning, I still enjoyed it.
Here's my thinking. I liked it the whole way through. I enjoyed everything about it, and it shows how blind I am. Because I'll read reviews and they are scathing, or I'll read some guy making a side about it and how it just drives him nuts the way they talk in this. And I'm like, wow, I just really like this. I was really disappointed when I heard that.
The one criticism that I really agreed with was it's hard to feel sympathetic for some of the characters. You know, it's hard to feel sympathetic for a writer that makes a gazillion dollars.
Yeah.
You know, and says, bring my car around, and it's an exotic sports car. It's like, wow, your life sure sucks, doesn't it, Mr. Wang? I can't be funny this week.
Yeah, I hear
versus,
that.
Versus, you know, West government or doctors or lawyers where you're really...
They're also making gazillions.
You know, but it's the altruism with, like, ER of a doctor show, it's easier to identify with because you don't see them driving around a Mercedes. You see them in scrubs.
Yeah, I hear them, but I still... liked it a lot. It disappointed me greatly.
There's a lot of talk about Lost being not as good and people becoming frustrated with
it. And its numbers are tanking.
I think a lot of that has to do with it's on at 10 o'clock now.
Yeah.
I tape everything. I see very little when it's broadcast.
Yep.
Just the same, Lost was one that I would make an effort to watch, but not at 10 o'clock.
Yep.
I'm a loser. That's usually bedtime. I cannot, usually don't stay up to watch it. And a lot of people that I talk to that are fans of the show do not like the fact that it starts at 10 now.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of it is that and how much of it is the fact that they now have to write for the fact that the studio wants it to be, the studio's trying to milk it for as long as possible. And the writers are trying to say, well, there's a limit.
Yep.
And they're trying to find this balance.
I just gave up on it like a long time ago.
Yeah. And
no interest.
Understandable. That being said, I was just thinking the other day, the greatest invention in the history of the universe has got to be DVRs and TiVo.
Yep.
Because my God, my life is so much easier now that I don't have to worry about physically putting a tape in the VCR.
Yep.
And setting the VCR to record this or that. Oh my God, that is the best. Not vaccines.
I gotta get
DVRs.
One. Mine is it's just like $5 extra. I just need to go up and pick the dang thing up. I'm just too lazy to driving into Seattle.
You don't have a DVR?
No, I have access to the paper. I mean the video on demand stuff, but it's like a different receiver that's $5 extra.
Wow.
And I'm just been too lazy
to go get it.
Well,
video
on demand does not cut it. Video on demand, there'll be a bunch of shows that they've chosen for you. So like CBS shows, like CSI and stuff. But in general, it's not. I mean, I would sit there. I'm about ready to get rid of all the cable. I keep saying that
past
3 years.
You've been saying that for like a
year. Now I'm going totally broke, so I definitely need to do it. But at this point now, it's like so there's enough content that's being put out for free now, just enough free or not that much cost on iTunes that it almost makes it, yeah, I could leave because I'm not watching that many shows. The few that are out there, like The Office or Studio 60, I can go to abc.com and watch them. And now that they're putting out like all the, both NBC and CBS are both putting out their evening news and Face the Nation and Meet the Press, I can sit down and watch those things completely. And it takes enough of my, hang on a second here. Okay, we're still recording. I have a psycho cat who almost tore my computer out of the off the couch. But anyway, there's enough I can watch that I sort of don't feel a desperate need to have cable anymore. But I know I've said that continually.
Yes, you have. It's a hard cable to cut, so to speak. All right, I think Oscars is our last main topic. I actually don't have much to say. I'm gonna watch them. My wife's very excited about watching them. I don't know why.
I love watching the Oscars.
I will watch them and enjoy them. But it'll be cool if Little Miss Sunshine wins, I'll be happy. If The Departed wins Best Picture, I'll be happy. If Babel wins, I'll be happy, even though I didn't see it, so I don't have.
Yep.
I'm not invested, but I'll be happy just because an innovative filmmaker who's a little bit outside the system will have won.
Yep, yep. I'm excited. I just love the Oscars. I love seeing. I love seeing what happens, what goes on. I love hearing all the lead up. I love how now everybody's sniping at Eddie Murphy and nobody wants him to win now because he's a jerk. And Norbit came out and then what's his name isn't such a lock for best actor. Idi Amin, maybe it'll be Peter. I mean, I just love all that talk.
My friend, who shall remain nameless for the moment to protect his identity, I was asking him because he saw Ghost Rider last week and said since he went in with zero expectations, he enjoyed it. He mm-hmm. liked it more than Daredevil.
Yep.
And I said, well, what else have you seen recently? And he said, oh, well, since he's been going on a couple of dates, he was forced to see Norbit. I was like, whoa, any chick that wants to see that, I don't know if I want to be with.
Wow.
And then he went on another date and had to see, and I already forgot the title, but it's like this Mandy Moore thing.
Oh, that was the one I was telling you about that has Diane Keaton in it. And the previews of it, every single shot, Diane Keaton's neck is completely covered by something. Oh, jewels, yeah. A sweater or something. It's so obvious that she's trying to hide the turkey neck that people get when they're older. And I'm thinking, don't. It looks so much worse. Every shot, she's like on a beach and she's wearing this thing. But anyway, can't remember the name of it, but it's with Diane Keaton.
My poor buddy's had to endure these horrendous date movies, and I feel so bad for him. Because
he should go to the new Hugh Grant one. I heard that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, that actually did look funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're trying to get with a girl, it's what she wants to
see.
Yeah,
that's true. That's funny. So you're talking about him and the Oscars, though.
No.
I thought you were leading into a story about
it. I don't think I was. Hmm. You said Norbit, and that's what made me think of it, Eddie Murphy. But that it's an interesting thing of people saying, well, the fact that Norbit was released right when the Academy members need to decide may have been a really bad mistake. Because they look at Eddie Murphy's performance, they say it's great, and then they look at Norbit and they think...
And it's the worst of what everybody has accused Eddie Murphy of doing, which is... selling out, lowest common denominator, slumming through something that is dumb and full of fart jokes. And supposedly Dreamgirls was, wow, he's actually trying to stretch and be legitimate and move on. Great Freddie Murphy. What's this new movie coming out? And so they're thinking, and plus Eddie Murphy is sort of notorious. He's not a particularly nice guy. He's basically a jerk from what I understand.
A lot of people say that.
And there's other ones that you'll hear about that, like that Forrest Whitaker, everybody says he's a very private guy, but he's an incredibly nice, mellow guy, and that's a huge factor for him. He sometimes is really, he comes across as like, what's going on with him? He's pissed off, but from what every actor says, he's like this really nice guy, so he's got a good reputation, and that actually helps. You know, and Eddie Murphy, I mean, he's just got a horrible reputation.
Yeah.
So.
So we'll see what happens. And clearly we'll talk about it next week.
I know.
Let's real quick. I've got video games real quick and then the Please Stop.
Okay.
So video games I've been playing. I think I borrowed half of your Xbox games.
Oh, yeah.
I've been playing Call of Duty 3.
Yep.
Very enjoyable just as a shooter.
Yep.
I've been into it. We were talking about how you can't skip through the cutscenes, which is a horrendous oversight.
Yeah.
Although,
revisit a scene.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Yeah. If, as you say, it's masking loading, well, it's more acceptable then, but it's still, you're just like, I need to be doing something else. I can't watch this cutscene acting.
Yep.
And until I adjust it, I finally figured out the setting to adjust this brightness for the screen.
Yeah.
Because it's only available from the main menu, not the pause menu.
Yep.
But a lot of the dark scenes were really too dark. Anyway,
in some of those games, Call of Duty was one, and what was the other one I've been playing? Oh, like Halo, another one. I just, even though it looks ridiculous, I just turn the gamma up to 100% so I can get through the damn thing. Especially if you're using a video projector, because sometimes those cannot be as bright, and you just have to do it.
The other thing, I actually played the Crackdown Saturday morning and enjoyed it. Because I've never played a sandbox game, never played any of the Grand Theft Auto stuff, but the way this one is structured, where you're basically a super agent, not quite a superhero.
Yeah.
But as you go through, you increase your skills, you can jump higher, run faster, pick up more, stronger things. It looked really well done.
Yeah.
And I, based on the demo, I think I'll get this game. And it's actually, if I actually get an early enough version, I can get this Halo 3 beta, which will be cool, but that's not a motivating factor.
Well, I know, I could care less about the Halo 3 beta too, but I thought it's funny you see pictures posted of the boxes waiting to be opened in GameStops and people had scrawled across them. Beta featuring bonus game Crackdown.
Yeah.
And those are kind of cute, but I'm definitely interested in getting Halo 3. But I'm not interested in the beta because the beta is the joint game, the multiple player game. I'm not into that. I'm into the linear story part of Halo, and that's not part of this beta. So screw it. I'll just wait for the other.
Yeah, we'll see.
But anyway, I'm looking forward to it. I was about to buy it, but I got severely bit by a a cat, which is one of my on the job, which is one of the problems of running a cat shelter. And I literally could not use my thumbs. So the ability to play Crackdown, and I know I would have, if I bought it or purchased it, I would have tried to play it and it would have made life a lot worse. So I decided not to. And then now I'm kind of broke, so I probably won't buy it, but.
Well, yeah, there's Crackdown. There's not that much. There's Crackdown. I think there's Forza in May.
I know. For me, I'm just sitting here. I'm sitting here waiting around. Well, there's a couple. I'll probably, when it comes out in summer, pick up the Half-Life Orange box or whatever.
That's fall now.
Oh, is it fall? Great. And then November is the one I'm waiting for, which is Grand Theft Auto 4. And I literally bought my Xbox exactly 1 year to the day before it was available.
That's funny.
But it's like, but they've got a set in stone date of November or whatever it is. And I'll probably buy the Half-Life one just because I'll play, it's the best game I've ever played. And I'll look forward to playing through that again and playing through and also Portal and some other stuff, but it's so good. And I'd like to see how it plays with a Xbox controller.
Yep.
Cause to me, it's such a primary computer game, but.
Okay, Please Stop this week is a little esoteric, but I actually went to buy a paperback book, and I haven't bought a new paperback in a while. I usually half-price book it. Barnes & Noble went to buy 50 Degrees Below by Kim Stanley Robinson, just a science fiction new paperback.
Mm-hmm.
Please stop charging $8 for a paperback book.
Is that the going price these days?
That is what they're up to. I remember, this typical old, I remember when they were like $4 or $5, because I used to read the Star Trek paperback books. I was totally into that. And they were $4 or $5, and I thought, okay, that's a good value. That's fine. But paperbacks have been increasing over the years, and they were $6, and they were $6.50. And I skipped the $7 and $7.50, and now $8 for a paperback. I'm sorry, that is insane.
Please stop.
Please stop charging so much. I mean, it's...
I think you're getting old, it's called inflation.
That seems higher than the rate of inflation. Well, I'd have to sit down with a calculator and work it out. But, it's essentially doubled.
What were they 10 years ago?
I don't know if it was 10 years, but like my baseline is $4 or $5.
Yeah.
Maybe $5. Well, if you say $4, then you could say it's doubled.
Yeah, well, then that's higher than inflation.
And I'm sure the cost of paper pulp has not doubled.
Paper has. That's one of the big problems is paper, especially because of
But the cost of a hardback hasn't doubled. It's,
no.
I think it might have gone from 20 to 30.
Yeah, but the difference with hardback and paperbacks is hardback, the vast majority of the costs are it's not paper, and paperback it becomes that. So it becomes the vast majority of cost. So if you're printing a paperback and you have some fixed costs in there, such as promotion, distribution.
I hold the book in my hand and I think this did not cost $8 to make.
Well,
this did not cost anywhere close to that.
No,
I have no idea.
No,
what
I understand
cost to make that,
but the
book,
percentage of the costs as reflected on a hardback, it's probably 10% of the cost. On a paperback, it's probably 40% of the cost. So if the cost of paper doubles, it's definitely going to go up quicker than it would on a hardback, because a hardback, you only need to raise the cost of dollars. You're only raising
we'll
it a few
see,
percent.
But
I agree. I as somebody who hardly ever buys paperbacks, because I like having hardbacks, I recognize I'm not really connected to that as much. But then when I do, something will strike my fancy and I want to buy one. I invariably buy trade paperbacks, because the books I read, which are like sociology books or a book about like a popular history book of like that King Leopold's Ghost or something like that, those they charge like $16 for. And it kills me paying $16 for a paperback. Because I know if I can just go to the right used bookstore, I can buy the hardback version for $3 somewhere.
Yeah, and every so often, especially in the summer when I'm looking for an excuse on what to do on my motorcycle, I'll do a round of half-price books. I'll hit like 5 of them in a row.
It's hard for me because I'll go into them and I walk out with about $80. I'm literally, as I'm going to the register, grabbing new things. I can't do 5. I walk out with...
Very rarely do I impulse buy in there. Usually if I'm going to half price books, I have a goal, and if I don't find it, maybe I'll find something else.
I can see an entire row of books here that are half price books that are complete impulse buys. Anyone that's tall down there, it's definitely a half price book and it's definitely an impulse buy.
That's funny.
Yeah, I have no self-control. Well, we better wrap it up.
Do you have a please stop before we...
No, I couldn't think of any. Sorry.
Which is just our excuse to whine about something.
That's true.
All right. There was no email. There was one email this week, but really it was to tell you to stop having the cats hiss into the mics.
Sorry. Well, we didn't have it this week, but a cat did attack the computer.
It's a really... we have a really pro recording setup.
Sorry. I don't know. He was going crazy, but he didn't hiss.
You guys rock. At mustardaonaise.com is how you contact us. Mm-hmm. We will discuss your email if it's, relevant. And I think that's about it. Cool. So Oscars tonight, we'll have that talk about next week. Yep. And we've got coming up Zodiac, 300, interesting movies coming out.
I'm so lately not interested in 300. I've just decided I think this thing, I'm hopeful, but I've heard too many, you see those trailers and how it's doing that slow motion cool stuff. It's like that for two straight hours. And I'm thinking, oh God. Zodiac, on the other hand, I could not be more excited about this. I am so excited. And I'm studiously avoiding every review, everything I can see, positive or negative. I just want to see the thing. I am so excited.
All right. I am
Richard.
Thanks for listening. Bye.